Blog Talk Radio.
Canto in Dallas, Texas on Friday, December the 8th. This is the morning that we woke up and it was like 26 here in North Texas. It was even 18. There were some places where they were close to 20. I mean, Denton, Texas was 18 degrees, I understand, this morning. DFW Airport was 22. We don't usually get temperatures like that in December. If we get them at all, they're usually in January or February when we may have a very, very cold streak. Sometimes we get ice and stuff like that. So this is kind of new. This is not the North Texas that we're accustomed to. But I got to tell you, I like it. I like it. It's kind of nice. It's just kind of a change of scenery, having to wear a sweater and going out and covering yourself. It's kind of cool. I kind of like it. I'm not sure that I would want it for the whole winter, particularly if you get a lot of snow with it. But right now, for a few days, maybe even a week or so, I think it's kind of cool. Today we're going to talk. I've got some thoughts about the Mueller probe. They're just having a lot of PR problems. They got to deal. They got to clean it up, or nobody's going to believe this report. Al Franken is out, but is he really out? We don't know. There's a very good number. Good unemployment rate. Hispanic unemployment rate 4.7. That's a very good number. And I continue to say that I think Donald Trump is going to be doing a lot better with Hispanics the next time around, because Hispanics are not obsessed with immigration. You sometimes get that in the media that all Hispanics do is talk about immigration. Actually, that's not true. They talk about other issues such as unemployment. So I think that's a good number. That's a good number. Hopefully it'll drop a little more. So good news about the American economy overall today. We're going to get into more of the numbers on a future program. Just a couple of quick things. And on this day in history, December the 8th, it was on this day in 1980, late in the evening. It would have been around 10 o'clock Central Time, 11 or so Eastern Time, that John Lennon was shot in New York. He was coming back to his apartment. I guess they were in a recording session or something, and they were coming back, and he was shot right there outside of his apartment building. He died, from what I understand, pretty much instantly. And it was a very shocking thing, of course. I fell asleep. I didn't hear the news until the next morning, but of course, a lot of Americans heard the news watching the Monday Night Football with Howard Cosell. There's a very interesting, if you want to go back and relive that, there's about a minute segment on YouTube where you can go back and relive that moment if that's how you found out about it. And it was on this day in 1941, very interesting day, because this was when President Roosevelt went to the Congress to ask for a declaration of war against Japan. And what makes this historic, aside from the fact that, of course, it started World War II, what makes it historic is that this is the last time that an American president has actually gone to Congress for a declaration of war. We've been in many conflicts since: Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, back to Iraq, Libya. And yet this was the first time that we ever actually had, or the last time that we had, a formal declaration. Iraq and Afghanistan, of course, were done by resolutions. Vietnam was done by a resolution, although I don't remember ever, I don't think anybody voted for the Gulf of Tonkin resolution on the assumption that that would take us to the Vietnam War. I think that was simply a case of stretching a resolution beyond its purpose. But anyway, 1941, December the 8th, President Roosevelt got a declaration of war with Japan from the Congress of the United States. I have a post over at the American Thinker today about the sonic attacks in Cuba. You may have heard about that. It's a really mysterious story. American diplomats have come back from Cuba with all kinds of hearing problems, in some cases even more serious than hearing problems, potential problems, even some problems, you know, in the brain problems. I mean, it's really pretty serious. And nobody knows how this happened. And of course, the Cuban government doesn't have a clue. They initially said that they didn't know what happened. Then they were blaming it on crickets, as if somehow crickets in Cuba decided to attack only American diplomats, because this did not happen to diplomats from other countries. Now, there is a Canadian diplomat who I think got caught up in it, but I wonder if they just maybe thought he was an American diplomat, or maybe was hanging around with American diplomats. Whatever the case, I think this is a very serious matter. It is currently under investigation. The White House and the State Department are looking at it. And of course, we will see what develops. But at some point, it seems to me, we're going to have to hold the Cuban government accountable for what happened to these diplomats, especially if we continue to get medical reports like we're getting, where some of the damage could be permanent. We need to find out what happened. If the Cuban government did it, then that's very serious. I mean, that's tantamount to an act of war. If a third country did it, which is what a lot of people believe, well, that's pretty serious too. But at the end of the day, it is the responsibility of the host government to protect diplomats. It is not the responsibility of the United States to protect its diplomats in Cuba. We protect diplomats in Washington, D.C., and every country protects the diplomats in their country. So obviously something went wrong here. Something went very wrong, and the Cuban government is going to have to be held accountable to it. I just don't know how else to explain it. They're just going to have to be held accountable to it. And will they? I think so. I think that there's going to come a point here over the next couple of months where President Trump, I think, is going to make a very strong statement about the Cuban government and about what happened. And I have a feeling it's not going to be very pretty what he says. But frankly, I suspect the worst here. I suspect the worst. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if this was an attack by the Cuban government on U.S. diplomats, maybe in retaliation to President Trump and some of the decisions that he's made to undo some of the Obama policies toward Cuba. We're going to have to figure that out and see what happens. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to hear from one of our sponsors. And I'm also going to tell you about Carlos Geddes. If you are on Facebook, I'm going to recommend that you check Carlos Geddes. Just go to the Facebook page and see where he's playing around town. I think you're going to enjoy him a great deal. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, December the 8th. The chilly Friday, as we like to call it around here. It's pretty chilly around here. I have a post coming out Saturday regarding Al Franken. As you know, he has resigned. Well, we believe he has. I mean, some people are actually saying that he left the door open to come back, and that could very well be true. I don't know. I don't know how that works out. But I'm going to assume that he is resigning. I think it would be very tough for him to say, you know what, I'm going to stay around, because the sense I get from reading the news and all of that is that the Democrat Party wants him out. They want him out. I don't ever think – I always thought that Al Franken was a bit of a character, not really a serious man. And I'm not so sure that a lot of Democrats were that happy with his election. Obviously, they took it because they want the seat. This was a seat that before 2008 was held by a Republican, so they were very happy to pick up the seat. But I never got the feeling that Al Franken was seen by most people in Washington as a very serious man. He's not. He's not a very serious man. He's a clown. For, you know, frankly, he is. And so I think a lot of Democrats are probably kind of happy that he's packing up and leaving. The question now, of course, is what happens next? Now, for the next year or so, until November 2018, until there's another election, the seat is likely to be held by the lieutenant governor of Minnesota, who will be appointed. This is a lady, I don't know her name, but she's the lieutenant governor. So the governor of Minnesota, Mr. Dayton, will appoint this lady, and that's who will serve until November 2018, when they have a formal election to replace Mr. Franken. The interesting thing here is the possibility that this seat could go Republican again. There's one name that apparently has surfaced, and that's Governor Mark Pawlenty, who was a very popular governor of Minnesota. At one time, he was considered to be one of the finalists for John McCain. When John McCain was looking for a vice president, he chose, obviously, Sarah Palin, but the name of Mark Pawlenty was on the short list. He was also on the short list when Mitt Romney was running for a vice president or was looking for a vice president in 2012. I have always liked Mark Pawlenty. I think he's a really capable guy, and best of all, he has a great reputation in Minnesota. So I can see a scenario if Mark Pawlenty runs for the Senate, and let's say there's a good Republican wind blowing in 2018. We're not going to know that, of course, until the spring or summer of 2018. But assuming the economy is doing well, which I think it will be, assuming that things are moving along, as I think they will be, I think there's a chance, a really good chance, that Mark Pawlenty could be elected senator of Minnesota, and that seat will flip to the GOP. Again, all these things are always based on this, on this, and this, and that, and it's way too early to tell because we don't know what this or that is going to happen. But if I can see a scenario where Mark Pawlenty becomes the senator of Minnesota, and that would actually be very good for Minnesota because he's a very capable man. Now, there's another Senate race happening on Tuesday, and that's in Alabama, where that seat, that election is to formally replace Senator Sessions, who became Attorney General of the United States. That particular race is starting to look more and more and more like Roy Moore is going to win that seat. A few weeks ago, there was a little confusion, and I think some people were thinking that Moore would lose. But the stars are lining up for not a massive victory, but maybe 52-47, something along those lines. So I think Roy Moore will win that race. Now, what happens to him when he comes to Washington? That's a big story, because I don't know whether the Senate is going to put him through an ethics committee and all of that. I don't know what the rules are, but that's a possibility. But I do think he's going to win. You know, his opponent, Doug Jones, is way too liberal for Alabama when it comes to Obamacare, when it comes to abortion. I mean, this simply, I just don't see any way that he can win. But on the other hand, if anybody but Roy Moore would be winning by 30 points. So the Republicans have to be careful in the future when they nominate controversial people, because Alabama is probably about the only place that a guy like Roy Moore, with all of this bad publicity, could actually win the election. You know, the investigation that started out over collusion with Russia has now gone into a lot of many things. And the Mueller probe, as we like to call it, I think is undergoing a very serious public relations problem. And I'm not necessarily saying that Mr. Mueller himself is dishonest, because I don't know that. And I like to believe that he's an honest guy, or at least that's what I hear from many people in Washington, many Republicans. But I do think that there are some very legitimate questions about some of the staffing decisions that were made. When you put people in your staff who are so closely connected to the Clinton Foundation, to Clinton, and so on, I think that's a bad idea. That's a bad idea. I think they should have gone out of their way to pick people who don't have a political reputation. Let me put it that way. People who are good lawyers, obviously, but who don't have a political connection, and they didn't. And now they have controversies with several people, and that's in their staff. You have that fellow who was texting 10,000 times or whatever. These are serious questions. And they're going to have to answer them. They're going to have to answer them. There's also the question of the FBI. Why is it that Hillary Clinton was never put under oath when she was being interrogated? So, I mean, there's some very legitimate questions here that Mr. Mueller is going to have to answer. Now, the best way he can answer them is by putting out a good report that everybody agrees with. But right now, given all of the staffing issues and all of the problems, I can tell you, I think it's going to be very tough. I really do. I think it's going to be very tough for him to write a report that people believe. I mean, the situation is just not a good one at all. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day. And we'll talk to you the next time. Bye-bye, everybody.